Hey there, homebrewers. There's great news from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Imperial Yeast is expanding to the East Coast with their new production facility in Philadelphia. Phase one of opening will include shipping their four guaranteed in-stock strains, A38 Juice, AO7 Flagship, L13 Global, and GO3 Dieter to commercial customers. Production build-out is underway, and KC at Imperial says they hope to offer their full lineup as well as homebrew pouches mid-2021. So that is excellent news. Imperial is growing, and it's no wonder. You know we love Imperial Organic Yeast. My stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. Ask your local homebrew store for Imperial Organic Yeast and check them out at imperialyeast.com. It's imperialyeast.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, December 31st, 2020. I'm James Spencer.
I'm Steve Wilkes.
With me is Steve Wilkes at stevesbrewshop.com here at Basic Brewing Radio. We're all about home brewing. This week, it's our annual Brewing Disaster Show, so buckle up. I like that noncommittal.
Well, it's the last day of 2020. I mean, what? We're going to send 2020 out with the disaster show. I mean, I'm waiting for, like, are there going to be pillars of salt? The disasters this year should be truly monumental.
Truly.
Just to match truly monumental.
Yes, yes. To finish the boilerplate stuff, if you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. And Steve is at Steve's Brew Shop on the socials. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter, including, I think I'm going to release this show early, like on Christmas, for the financial supporters as a little bonus.
Wow.
So Steve, it is our annual disaster show. What a gala day.
That's all I can handle is a gala day. I'm telling you.
I threw that one at you blind and I knew that you would hit it.
Well, many years of practicing stealing other people's jokes.
And a reminder, if you haven't yet, go and download our bingo card, our Disaster Show bingo card PDF. If you're downloading, it will be in the description of this episode on basicbrewing.com, and I'll probably tweet it out as well. And if you're downloading it early, go to the archives on basicbrewing.com and look at last year's, the description of last year's show, and you can click on the link there. So it's a fun thing. It's a blank bingo card, and there are little descriptors of things that you might hear in the show listed underneath, and you have to put those in your bingo card yourself. And angry spouse, boil over, broken equipment, new equipment, all kinds of stuff like that.
Yep.
So there you go. And we have beers in front of us, Steve. We have three beers sent to us by Scott Housel from South Florida, who, if you recall, it took me a while to recall, but Scott sent us beers to drink during the last disaster show last year.
Wow.
And now he sent us, this is an annual occurrence apparently, because he sent us three mystery beers and a sealed envelope with the descriptors of them. He says two of the beers should be easy to get in the ballpark. The third might be unfair or not exactly a style. So he says, I'm almost 60 batches over 3.5 years, but I'm still always trying something new and have rarely brewed a recipe a second time. So these are my first attempts for these recipes. I think soon I will attempt to perfect a few. So he might do some of these again. So do you have beer number one in front of you? We might as well start off with sipping a beer.
I do. I have it in front of me.
I think beer number one's pretty tasty.
Yeah, it's it's hazy. It's fruity. It's NEPA-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me very much of the hop sampler recipe.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wonder if he's duplicated the hop sampler recipe with this.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, it's right up that alley. Yeah, it's really good.
I couldn't tell you what hops, but they're tasty. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I have this giant stack of letters in front of me, Steve. So you get to sit and drink beer and chuckle every now and then and add a nugget of wisdom every now and then. That's your job today. Are you up to it?
I'm up to almost anything now.
Well, buckle in. Here we go.
Okay.
Dan McCarthy from Kalamazoo, Michigan. He says, hope everything is going well for you. It's been a few years since I sent down my wasabi beer and gruets for you and Steve to try. Do you remember drinking a wasabi beer?
You know, I do kind of. It's not like emblazoned on my on the what used to well there's a lobotomy there now, but so I'm moving a little slower these days, but. But I do remember drinking a wasabi beer.
Yeah, it seems like I remember, and it's been a long time. But I seem to remember enjoying it and thinking that maybe I needed a little more wasabi in there. I don't know. Oh. Anyway, yeah. It's going to be out. It's going to take. If we talk this long about every letter, it's going to be like hours. This show.
Yeah.
It may be anyway. Okay, so Dan says. Since he sent the beers down, he's gotten married, congratulations, moved to Kalamazoo, so he's got a gal in Kalamazoo, bought a house, and have begun to be known in another city as the guy who brews weird things. Well, there are worse things. After many years of listening to the podcast and hearing all the brewing disasters, dreading the day I'd finally have one to share, I finally have one to share. Dan says, on Saturday, our homebrew club paired with a local cider mill to get fresh pressed cider and pear juice for us to ferment. All we needed to do was bring in our sanitized buckets and they would fill them up.
When wow.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, that's a big wow.
Yeah. Cider and pear?
Yeah.
When I arrived, I quickly filled up 5 gallons of each. And as I was about to leave, I was told that a number of the club members were out back, had a campfire, and were catching up. Being my first chance in 7 months to see all of them, I quickly put the fermenters in my trunk, said I'd strap them down before I left, and went to the fire. So foreshadowing. If you foreshadowing, put foreshadowing on your bingo card, then there you go. Well, as homebrew club meetings can, time got away from me, and I realized my short stop had turned into an hours-long hangout, and I had to stop at the homebrew store before heading home. I jumped into the car. Note that I did not strap the fermenters in like I said I would, and drove away. Things were fine until I made the final turn into the homebrew shop's parking lot, and I heard a big splash in the back. Nobody likes a big splash in the back.
What? No.
Well, some people might, but... I nimbly parked the car and went to the trunk to see the damage, hoping that somehow only a small amount of cider had splashed out. But of course not. One of the fermenters was empty on its side. Mm. And 5 gallons of cider were now seeping throughout my car. Mm. Not ready to come to terms with it yet, I silently closed the trunk and went in to get the yeast. I still had one batch to make. As I stood in line to check out, one of the workers kindly pointed out that my car was leaking fluid all over the parking lot. I glumly told him the tale of my afternoon's chaos and how it certainly ended. I got home and began the process of cleaning out my car and wielding hose and shop vac. I sprayed and sucked gallons of cider.
Who hasn't done that?
It's a family show. It's like,
yeah.
First there's a splash in the back, and now it's...
Now you spray and suck.
Gallons of cider from carpet and from the spare tire well.
Oh, God.
It was about this time I realized I had to get dinner ready and take care of my two dogs, one of which, Liffy, was pregnant. And we were expecting puppies within a week. Unsurprisingly, Liffy wasn't too hungry and went to lay down on her bed in our bedroom when I rushed around the kitchen continued to rip parts of my car apart and tried to find the words to tell my wife that the cider she was looking forward to was now soaking between the seats in my car. Dan says his explanation swirled around in my head. My wife returned home, and I went inside to have dinner ready on the table. That should help smooth the bad news, and to use the bathroom. As I walked into the bedroom, I noticed Liffy is no longer the only dog in her bed, and she now shared it with two newborn puppies. Sorrow over spilt cider now turned into panic, and I rushed out to the garage to tell my wife, who was staring at my torn-apart car in the garage, and grab rag towels, a majority now soaked with cider. As we headed inside, I closed my trunk, knowing that we now had more pressing issues than the cider soaking throughout my car. After a night of chaos, we have six healthy Australian Shepherd puppies, and the lost cider is no longer in our minds. After an extensive next day of cleaning, my car still smells of fresh cider and likely will forever.
Jeez.
And Dan says, P.S., the cider mill will be pressing more cider later this month, so I'll still be able to ferment some for my wife. So there you go.
There you go.
Thanks, yeah. Dan. I appreciate that.
Yep. He just needs to pitch a little liquid yeast in there. You know, some Imperial Dieter.
Dieter in the wheel well?
Dieter in the wheel well.
That's got a nice rhythm to it.
It does.
Dieter in the wheel well. Oh, Keegan from Ontario, Canada writes, my story just happened this past weekend. I've recently just got into making some mixed fermentation sour beers. They're a little more effort, but so worth it. The latest batch is a Saison, fermented with the Mad Fermentationist Saison blend from Bootleg Biology, dry hopped with a hefty dose of Mosaic, then bottle conditioned. First mistake, he says. Yes, this is one of those stories. Everything was going well. I fermented the Saison for 3 weeks in primary, and the gravity seemed to be stable. Second mistake. So I dry hopped with 5 ounces of Mosaic and let it sit on the hops for 3 days. Third mistake. So he's counting the mistakes here, Keegan is, before bottling. I calculated my priming sugar addition as I normally do, though since starting kegging, I rarely bottle anymore, and dosed it into my bottling bucket, racking the beer on top. I figured since the beer was swirling around the bucket as it flowed in and not wanting to oxidize the beer any more than necessary, there was no need to stir in the sugar. Fourth mistake. Mm. I bottled off into aptly named bombers, cleaned up, and then set them in a cardboard box in my basement for a few weeks to condition. Well, after about 2 weeks, I was awoken to what sounded like glass shattering, which I think is on the list. I did not even consider that it could be beer related at first. I sat up in bed, waiting for any follow up noises to see if someone was breaking into the house. After a minute, I was convinced no one was, and figured a dish must have shifted in the drying rack or dishwasher and broken a glass. I went back to sleep. A few hours later, I woke to go degas a batch of mead in the basement. I checked out the kitchen on the way and couldn't find any broken glass anywhere. Baffled, I continued on to the basement to the mead. The first thing that struck me as I walked down the stairs was how great the basement smelled, oddly like Mosaic hops. And then I saw it, glass and beer everywhere. The top half of one of the bottles, still intact and with the cap on, was on the opposite side of the room from where I had left it, in a box. I quickly donned some gloves and safety glasses and began the delicate process of moving all the intact bottles into the fridge. I'm happy to report no more bottles exploded, and on top of that, I opened a test bottle, and the beer was perfectly carbonated and delicious. I'm still not sure what went wrong, but so far at least it seems to be just the one bottle that had an issue. So after a good scare and some thorough mopping, a mostly happy ending. That's from Keegan in Ontario, Canada. So it could have been worse.
Yeah, it could have been. I was expecting it to be worse.
So what do you think happened there? A little. Maybe should have stirred a little more.
That's the only thing I can think sugar. Of. Yeah, if that priming liquid didn't, if it stratified somehow or a little bit, then yeah, you got a bottle that was just full of sugar.
Or maybe there was a little funk in that one bottle that you know, maybe he didn't wash out the, you know, the funky bugs from that one bottle, and they get a little active.
Yeah.
Jeff from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I had been brewing extract beers for about a year and had decided to make the transition to all-grain brewing. My buddy, Al, had discussed homebrewing before, and he was interested in coming over to see what it was all about. And I figured it would be good to have an extra set of eyes, ears, and hands in the brew house. To give you a mental image of the space where the disaster occurred, I was renting a room from my buddy and his girlfriend. It was a first-floor, two-bedroom condo where the living room, which was carpeted, and the kitchen, which had just been redone with quartz countertops, new appliances, and laminate flooring, was open concept, and the only dividing line was where the carpet and the laminate flooring met. I filled my that's a good drinking game. Every time you, when you see those home flipper shows or home improvement shows, every time somebody says open concept, take a sip. Yeah. I filled my 5-gallon cylindrical cooler mash tun with a couple gallons of preheating water while the strike water was heating. Once the strike water came up to temperature, Al drained off the preheating water from the mash tun and grabbed the crushed barley. As I shut the valve and carefully poured the mash water in, Al gradually dispensed the grains into the mash water as I stirred the grains into the mash. No, you don't want to get dough balls. We screwed on the lid on the mash tun and set it on a hutch, which sat about 2 feet off the floor and flush against a wall. We waited the 60 minutes for the mash to finish, performed the iodine test, checking for starch conversion, and we were good to start sparging. I had my copy of Joy of Homebrewing and started reading directions aloud on recirculating before sparging to the brew pot. Al affixed the length of tubing to the big valve on the mash tun and placed a pitcher on the laminate floor under the tubing. Following the directions, I slowly opened the valve, and nothing came out. Stuck mash! So we searched the internet for various solutions to remedy the situation. Nothing worked. Finally, we stumbled on a website that said if you open the ball valve all the way and gently blew air back through the drainage tube into the mash tun, it should break things free. And since it was pre-boil, any nasty should be killed in the boil. What did we have to lose? Never asked that question.
Yeah.
I grabbed the open end of the tubing, made sure the ball valve was wide open, pursed my lips, and gently blew into the tube. Nothing. Tried a couple more times. Nothing. Al then suggested taking the lid off the mash tun, so we removed the lid. Al positioned himself at the ball valve to turn it off at a moment's notice in case the wort started to flow, so I gave it another shot, probably too aggressively. Hot wort and crushed grains bubbled over on the hutch and splashed on the wall and then started flowing out of the tube. However, Al was derelict in his duties manning the valve, so I had to shuffle over and fill in for him. In doing so, I knocked the hose off the ball valve and watched in terror as sticky sweet wort spewed out onto the kitchen floor. I still have images of hot wort pooling up all over the laminate floor. Jeff says, in the end, about 2.5 gallons of wort and crushed barley was lost, mostly pooled up on the floor.
Oh, Lord.
As I walked over to the bathroom cabinet to grab cleaning supplies, I looked behind me, and Al was already halfway out the door, putting his shoes on, saying, well, gotta go. Have things to do at home. I'll talk to you later. Not such a good friend, Al.
No, I think Al just lost his line and lost his place in line for one of my beers.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, he cannot share in the harvest. I had almost finished cleaning up, and my roommates came back home to see me on hands and knees with a pile of wort-soaked paper towels, soiled sponges, and various floor cleaners scattered about. My buddy looked at me and laughed, while his girlfriend just said, oh, hi, and began to walk on the area where the spill had occurred. The sound when the soles of her shoes lifted from the floor sounded like someone peeling apart two strips of industrial strength Velcro.
Oh, that's rough. That's just rough.
It's like going through a movie theater. It took a couple thorough scrubbing sessions over the course of the week to get all the stickiness off the floor. I'm just glad the carpet escaped unscathed. The disaster was never spoken of again, but I did get funny looks from my buddy's girlfriend when I mentioned that I was going to brew again. I'm guessing the free beer for the roommates on subsequent batches helped. Thanks, Jeff. Reminded me when we spilt honey must all over your kitchen floor.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
That was sticky for a while.
Yeah, I think I scrubbed that floor more than 10 times.
Luckily, Gretchen was out of town.
Yeah, she was in Santa Fe, I think. So I got her cleaned up, and then we remodeled. We ripped it all out. But not because of that.
I was going to say, as a result, that was an expensive batch of meat.
Well, yeah. No, it wasn't because of that.
Frederick from Sweden opens with a line that a lot of us might identify with. My spouse does not like my brewing. It is smelly, and I am locked in the kitchen messing around for a long period of time. Therefore, I only brew when she is not home. As a no-chill brewer, I can put a lot of brews in one day due to no chilling, no yeast pitching, and whatnot. So Frederick's got it under control.
Yeah.
This was the first brew for the day. I planned to do three before she came home from her sister. The mash went in surprisingly well, but then I'm not sure how or why, but I opened the faucet of my brew kettle, spilling about 10 liters of my 20-liter wort straight into my dishwasher.
What's up with these kettles? I mean, people opening up their ball locks.
Leave your ball locks alone.
That's what I'm saying.
Frederick from Sweden says, thank you, unknown person on the internet, for the tip of holding beer when bottling and brewing over the dishwasher in case of spillage. Oh, okay. That's the old trick of when you're bottling, you do it over the open door of the dishwasher.
Yeah.
That way, if it spills, it just goes on the door. You just shut the door and run the dishwasher and it's cleaned up. Mm-hmm. So I thought, hey, I've come this far, right? So I rolled with it, filled the kettle with more water, now aiming for a lower ABV saison. After the boil, I filled my no-chill cube with the kettle's faucet. It has a silicone hose long enough to reach into the cube when it sits on my dishwasher's lid when it's open, so that if I spill, the wort does not soil my floor. Remember, that's what saved me. Now to the cleaning, Frederick says. I filled my brew kettle with water and my DIY wannabe PBW-ish mix. So he made his own cleaning stuff. Mm-hmm. He says, Google it. It contains laundry detergent. So he filled his brew kettle with this stuff. And as the already warm kettle heated this mix, I cleaned the kettle and then opened the faucet, the one with the silicone hose, down to my open dishwasher. Mm-hmm. Then, happy with the first brew, it was time for lunch, and before that, I put stuff into the dishwasher and started it. Mm-hmm. It made a sound, then stopped. So I tried again, the same. Frederick says, do you know what happens when you put a mix of laundry detergent in a dishwasher? Well, let me tell you, I know. This detergent finds its way through parts of your dishwasher you didn't even know it had. Under this dishwasher is a piece of styrofoam that floats if there were a leak, causing it to stop. With fine detergent in it, from, let's say, a cheapo DIY wannabe PBW-ish mix, water finds its way down under, and the machine, thinking it's a leak, stops. In 6 hours, my spouse will get home, and she will be angry if she finds this, Frederick says. I did the only thing I could think of. It's the exact same thing that I do when I work and something breaks. I called my guy. Yeah, I have a fixing guy that happened to be a part of the maintenance department on my workplace. Let me tell you, this guy can fix anything. Luck finally struck me. He had time to come over. He fixed the dishwasher in under an hour, and I had time to clean everything. So there was no trace of my brew weekend. Frederick says, no, I had not been drinking. I like to grab a beer after my brew day is over. When I finally tapped a glass of my beer, my family came home and my wife commented on the brew smell. This happened in 2018 and my dishwasher still works. I've not told her and I don't think I will. And also, I have never since made any clean mix and I never will. Hashtag support your homebrew store. So... there you
yeah.
go. Maybe just rely on the commercial products.
Yeah, there's a reason why PBW and, you know, One Step and all those things exist.
It reminds me, I had a kind of a disaster. It wasn't brewing related, but it is dishwasher related. I was real proud of myself because our garbage disposal went out. And so I replaced it. I just went to the hardware store, got another one, and just unplugged the old one, you know, from the sink and from the, you know, there's a hose that goes from the dishwasher into the disposal. So I just unplugged everything, put the new one in, plugged it back up, and, you know, there you go. And so the output of the dishwasher goes into the garbage disposal through that tube. So I was all proud of myself and, you know, posted on Facebook how, you know, handy I was and everything. And then I started the dishwasher and I went out of the room. And then a few minutes later, Susan texts me, my wife texts me, there's foam all over the kitchen floor. Well, it turns out there's this you got to punch the hole out, you know, because not everybody has a dishwasher.
Yeah.
And so if you have a dishwasher, you got to puncture the end of that hose inlet thing so that the outflow from the dishwasher can go into the disposal. So I had to take everything apart and punch the hole and put it back in. And so there you go.
Yeah. Well, I was at my brother's house many years ago and he had a big hot tub and I never had a hot tub before, you know? And so I thought, oh, this will be great. I'm going to take a bubble bath in a hot tub. And I put a bunch of bubble bath stuff in this hot tub and I had bubble bath taller than the shower. I had voluminous amounts of bubbles and I was too embarrassed to own up to it. So I was in the bathroom for like 2 hours scooping bubbles out the window of this house in Omaha in the wintertime. And they were starting to worry about me, like, Steve, are you okay in there? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just enjoying the winter in Omaha in the bathtub. And it's,
I like some fresh air. Well, I'm
like old fresh air. Yeah.
It's like it's like the Brady kids have been doing laundry.
Yeah, it was just like that. It was exactly like that.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Jorge from Chile. I hope I pronounce everything right in this episode. Steve's doing most of the drinking, so it should be all right. Jorge from Chile says, hello, James. It was winter here in South America, so I decided to brew an oatmeal stout. I have an electric brew-in-a-bag system with continuous recirculation, and everything was fine. 60 minutes of mashing, 15 minutes of mash-out. Then, when I wanted to remove the bag, at its highest point, my pulley attached to the ceiling failed, and it came off over my system, so the walls and floor of my brew room were decorated in a magnificent and sticky dark brown color. I was only able to save 10 liters of wort, so I thought, well, that'll be 10 liters of a 10-minute boil to avoid losing any volume oatmeal stout. After finishing, I added yeast and let it ferment without problems in a glass carboy. When the fermentation finished, I wanted to cold crash it, so I put the glass carboy in the fridge for 3 days. Later, when I wanted to keg it, when I took out the carboy, it slipped from my hands, breaking on the floor, and covered everything again in that magnificent dark brown color, but this time with alcohol added. Mm. So it's a double whammy on that one. Thanks, Jorge. Mm. Oof.
That's rough.
It is. have you moved on to beer number two yet?
Mm-hmm. I did. I just had a little sip of it.
These are mystery beers, by the way.
We don't know what they are.
We have an envelope from Scott. It had been sealed in a mayonnaise jar in Funkin' Wagnall's porch. So we're supposed to like guess, I guess, what these beers are. The first one is a nice hoppy, kind of hazy pale ale.
Mm-hmm.
What's the second one?
Second one's very fruity and it's tart to sour.
Mm.
I get kind of a bubblegum and melon maybe passion fruit.
Oh, yeah. With a nice tartness on the end.
Yeah, it's so different from the first beer. I have to admit, my first sip of it, I went, uh-oh. And it's like, not sure that's supposed to be sour. But actually, it's real pleasant, and I think it is supposed to be sour. I hope that it is, but it's real pleasant. And it's just got that real kind of tart, kind of summery, although there's quite a bit of mouthfeel. It's not a, it's not thin or watery. It's definitely not like a Berliner Weiss kind of sour beer. It's definitely got a lot of body to it, and a fairly complex taste profile.
Yeah, very nice. very nice. This is from Matt. Long-time listener, he says, first-time disaster brew emailer. My brewing disaster story inadvertently spans over the past 8 months.
Oh, so it's a lambic.
Well. Matt says, before the world ended earlier this 2020, I was diligently brewing some of my favorite recipes for an upcoming competition season. One brew was my current favorite amber ale that I was really looking forward to getting some feedback. As I was carrying the carboy from the back porch through the kitchen and to the fermentation fridge in the garage, I went to make a quick balance adjustment and lost hold of the carboy. Luckily, it was a plastic carboy. I never use glass carboys when I'm brewing alone after listening to years of Basic Brewing Disaster Brew episodes.
Yeah.
Matt says, though the carboy didn't break, or even split or crack the plastic, there was a rush of unfermented wort spilling across the kitchen floor at tidal wave speeds through towards the refrigerator and the oven. It's at this point in the story I should mention my wife has never had an issue with my homebrewing hobby or the money I've sunk into it as long as I continue to honor her one stipulation, and that is always to clean up after myself when brewing. I did give it an honest effort to clean up as much as I could as quickly as I could. After all, I still had half a carboy of wort that was quickly rising past pitching temperature, waiting for me. After I did a quick clean on everything and pitched the yeast, I went back for a more thorough cleaning. I managed to clean the floor completely and wipe down the splash zones. As I was wiping up small puddles of wort that pooled along the baseboard of the cabinets between the refrigerator and oven, my mind somehow convinced me that there was no possible way liquid wort made it under the appliances, and the few millimeters I could reach with my fingertips was more than adequate cleaning. Flash forward 8 months later, when my wife starts a deep cleaning in preparation for a Halloween brunch in October. For the first time in the 15 years we've lived in this house, I see her pull the refrigerator away from the wall.
Oh, boy.
As you can imagine, she uncovered some sticky, dark, crusty ooze when she did this and started to wonder what she was looking at. The idea of it being a result of a brew day never seemed to enter her mind, and she never asked if I knew what it was. Matt says, I was reasonably sure I was going to get out of this one by merely never making it to her suspect list. But then she began talking about getting an appliance repair company to come take a look. Forgetting the dollar signs that immediately ran through my head for what would be nothing, the idea of someone eventually pinning down the ooze as some form of sugar water made me realize it was better late than never to fess up about my little spill. Back in February, I was duly punished with a major homebrewing budget cut for the next year that's being reallocated to the new refrigerator my wife was hoping all this would lead to when she saw the mess. And I guess it did. Lesson learned this time. Now I'm going to check under the oven before she hears this. Matt says, thanks for all the years of entertainment and cheers to many more to come. So I guess that would fit under the new equipment category there. But there you go. There, you know, do you fess? You know, you're caught in the situation where if it's like, huh, how about that? Well, I wonder what that is. But then when you get the money situation with a repairman coming over, that's a problem.
Yeah, I think you're better off just to say, oh, look what happened today, and move forward.
Greg says, I've been brewing several years and I never had a disaster. That is until just weeks before your disaster show airs. So I figured I'd go ahead and write in since this was my first one. I rent a two-bedroom apartment with my girlfriend on the third floor. We use the second bedroom for some of our storage, and I also use it for my fermenting room, all caps.
Hmm.
I decided to brew a South African-hopped IPA and pitched Imperial Yeast Viking Blend into a corny keg for fermentation. I usually ferment under pressure, so a spunding valve was in use. Mm-hmm. My work schedule leads me to finish my brew day right before bedtime. So as I woke up for work, I came to check, and my spunding valve was gradually spraying beer, yeast, and hop debris in a restricted flow, spraying all over my hardwood floor and bookshelf containing CDs and my girlfriend's books.
Oh, God.
Do not know how long this had been happening, but I quickly ran and carried my corny keg to the bathtub to let it expel further there. Well, if it's that Viking yeast, it had been happening all night because it gets... Number one, it's Imperial, so it gets going quick. And number two, it's the Kvike, so it's happy. Greg says, realizing this was not just an ordinary mess and spending 20 to 30 minutes soaking up whatever sticky wort I could, I had to run off to work, and my poor girlfriend took over. Uh-oh. In the end, many books were destroyed and or stained, as well as personal records. Uh-oh. And a couple old photo albums that were within the lower part of the bookshelf. Luckily, the photos were able to be saved. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
The cause for all this, and I'm kicking myself repeatedly for it. Can you guess?
It's no.
It has to do with the colors gray and black.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I screwed on my gas post to my liquid floating dip tube, and instead of gas coming out of my keg, it was beer, yeast, hop debris, and a whole sticky mess. When I finally got home, I saw all of my beer had emptied itself out of the keg and down the drain in the tub due to the pressure of fermentation, and it was then that I realized what I had done wrong. I initially thought it was a crazy Kvike blow-off. Lesson learned. I will always be sure to check what side is which and make a visual reminder after I chill my wort, as this is far more devastating of a scenario than it would be in a keezer, I would imagine. Never again in this apartment, she says. I guess I'll have a lot of making up to do to convince her to let me brew here again in the future. Hopefully, she eventually finds my already kegged previous brew is delicious enough to shorten my brewing probation. Thanks, Greg. Greg says, love your show and looking forward to hearing any other brewing disasters others may have. Misery, misery loves company. That's what I say. I'm going to take another sip of beer.
That's a good idea.
Mmm. Ooh, tart and tasty. And forgive me for the pronunciation on this. Would it be Guillaume? G-U-I-L-L-A-U-M-E. Guillaume? Guillaume?
Yeah, I'd say Guillaume.
I took Spanish and not French, so I can mispronounce things less in Spanish than in French. No puedo recordar. That's what I would say. My Spanish teacher would always say, you know, always answer in complete sentences, you know, frases completas. And I would, and she would ask me a question like, ¿A dónde vives? And I would say, no puedo recordar. Which means I can't remember. Where do you live? I can't remember. Or no sé. That's another complete sentence that means I don't know. ¿Cuántos años tienes? No sé. Okay. Guillaume says, I am from Montreal, Quebec, and I've been brewing for a while now, 7 to 8 years or so, but in a quite low volume, 1 to 2 batches per year, when my brewing disaster happened. I had the pleasure in 2016 of having my first baby girl. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Remember, this is 2016. so the brewing time shrank quite a bit. I've heard you talk about mead in one of the first episodes, the fourth, actually. With my brewing time clearly reduced, I've been looking for a way to produce some kind of brewed beverage with shortcuts. So in spring of 2017, I went to a local honey producer and bought some fine honey, 3 kilograms of wildflower honey and 3 kilograms of raspberry honey. Or as we say in English, raspberry honey. I should worry about pronouncing English. yum, he says. I got my yeast and yeast nutrients. Then brewing day arrived. I measured 20 liters of water, then added the honey. That was my first strike. I didn't account for the honey volume.
Yeah.
But no worries. I had a 25-liter glass carboy, and it can handle it, I thought. I had just enough time to mix the honey with the water and pitch the yeast. Then the baby started crying, waking up from nap time. I safely dropped my carboy in the computer room where it would ferment. Then I went on with my day and my fathering. Next day, I added my yeast nutrient and I wanted to degas the thing, like I read, if with a little foreshadowing. Where would I do it? I took the carboy that was next to my computer and went to my laundry room in the basement. Now, that's where the tricky part happened. I had a window of time when my little girl went to sleep for the night and my own bedtime. I added the nutrients because, you know, it's easier to add a powder than to sanitize a wine degasser and get the power drill and attach those together and do the job, then clean the degasser, etc. So I went with the shorter action first in case the baby wakes up and I can't complete the job. The nutrient was more important than the degassing, I thought. Second strike. Since the carboy was oh so very full, more foreshadowing, I went easy on the drill. I waited a good whole minute and nothing happened. There was no sign of any activity, no twirling around, no bubble, nothing. Well, I thought, let's give it a bigger whirl, still filled with caution, about 4 seconds, and that was my mistake. The third strike putting me out of the game, if you will. There was only a slight twirling motion, and then what I would describe as a cat vomiting move. The liquid took a kind of retching motion in the carboy. Then, boom, a high pressure of liquid burst out of the carboy. There was a geyser of mead that blasted to the ceiling. I tried to put my hand on it, but the liquid was flowing, a huge mess, losing more than half of my honey soup. It was so crazy and so long that I was only able to laugh. That's what she said. Looking at the mess around and above me, all wet in sweet honey water. So I spent my 1 hour of free time a day for the following week cleaning up honey scattered all over the place. Needless to say, I didn't want to add more nutrients or degas it again. So I left the fermentation going for about 2 to 3 months. Then I racked it off the yeast. I also did a taste test. Boy, was it awful. It was so full of solvent taste. It melted the glass carboy. Just kidding on that one, but you get the idea. But like it's been said often on this show, don't throw it away. Maybe it'll turn into something great over time. I think you've said that more than me. So the mead stayed in secondary for an extended period of time. In spring 2019, I needed the carboy for something else. So I resolved myself to bottle this and wait it out in the glass bottles, you know, in case it turns into a drink of goodness and brilliance. To give it a year or to give it a chance to evolve naturally. So bottling was made and waited out for a full year. 1 year later, in spring of 2020, we all know what came around, a certain virus who shall remain nameless. At the beginning of the pandemic, it was kind of hard to get certain items from the grocery, and it started to feel like the end of the world. So in a desperate attempt, I took a bottle of my quote-unquote mead, chilled it, and tested it again. Then I said to myself, you know what? If it was the last alcoholic drink on the planet, I wouldn't drink this.
Oh, God.
I would much rather go dry and forget beer, wine, and mead ever existed.
Oh, that's so sad.
Finally, the drain won the privilege of drinking it all.
Yeah.
Guillaume says, all in all, I can still find sticky spots in this room 4 years later. I had ants in this very room. Yeah. The drink was horrible. The wife was very angry. And all this for me to learn that I can do stupid stuff. Then I heard about you talk about the exact thing on the show with Tim Lieber and a certain Mentos-like effect. So there you go. Oh, and the final line. Since you were the spark that generated the idea of mead making, I wanted to share this disaster story with you. It's all our fault.
Right.
Hey, but you know what? Let's hear from our friends and sponsors, Ricky and Kelly of Groenfell Meadery in Vermont. While we're on the subject of mead and help with mead questions and mead information and such, if you ever find yourself in a pinch with your homebrew or your home mead making, in addition to making fine craft mead, Groenfell Meadery is an open source company. On their site, you'll find hundreds of articles, recipes, and strange facts about mead all for free. And don't forget Ricky's Ask the Mead Maker channel on YouTube, where you can find even more mead making advice. Now, we've known Ricky and Kelly for a very long time, Steve, you and I. Yeah, we first met Ricky in the back of the Home Brewery back in the day when he was coming through town, and he brought us some interesting beers to drink. And then we met him again at HomebrewCon with his wonderful wife, Kelly, and sampled some of their meads up there. And, boy, they're just going like gangbusters now. You can order craft meads from across the country. They sent us some here. They sent us a wonderful sample pack, and I shared some with you.
Yes.
And they were awesome, weren't they?
Delicious, absolutely. And I'm so happy for them. I'm so happy that really good people who have a passion for what they do and are good at it are being successful with it. And also, they have such big hearts, they're willing to share it with whomever is interested.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. It's really great.
So check them out at groenfell.com. That's GroenFell.
Nice.
And I usually put a little ukulele stinger in there at this point.
Well, yeah.
So we're so happy that, our sponsors, Imperial Organic Yeast, Groenfell Meadery, and High Gravity in Tulsa, which we'll talk about a little bit later, they are helping us to put together little goodie packages to send out to all of our senders of these letters, our disaster show participants. So we appreciate everybody for helping to do that.
Sweet.
Ian says... loved the recent episode with the Citra and Simcoe sampler. In the show, you mentioned the annual disaster show. I said I would share the one and only, for now, disaster I had in my 7 years of brewing. Before I started kegging, I bottled all of my homebrew like many others. I have a nice little setup where the fermenters are on shelving at eye level. My fermenters have a spout at the bottom to sample and bottle from. What I do near the end of bottling is to sit a roll of tape under the fermenter to angle the fermenter toward the spigot to get every last drop. I do that too. And just, you know, when you get near the end, you kind of lean it over.
Yeah. I use a live ferret.
Well, that explains a lot.
It makes bottling so much more interesting. But do continue.
I don't know if I can. Ian says, well, one day I decided to put the tape under the fermenter at the start and not near the end. So I sat down in front of the fermenter and was bottling the beer with no issues. All of a sudden, the entire fermenter slid forward, fell off the shelving, hit me on the way down, whilst also emptying the entire batch over me and the floor.
Oh, man.
It gets better. Interestingly, my fermentation room is the same room we dry clothes in when the weather is not so good.
Oh, geez.
My girlfriend came running in as she heard the commotion going on and discovered me completely soaked in homebrew, along with all the clothes we just washed.
Oh, jeez. I tell you what, though, you do that with a ferret and you got a pissed off ferret. Ripping your face off. It's much worse.
Ian says, thankfully, I wasn't hurt except for my pride. I need a tissue. Oh, my God. Our friend Chris McKenzie from brewublog.com. That's a new extension.
No wonder I haven't been able to reach them.
You get something else completely.
Yeah.
That's Chris McKenzie from brewublog.com. That's brewublog.com, who's been on the show at least a couple times. Chris says it all started at the beginning. Oh, okay. It all as things do. Yeah. Okay, get control. Forget the ferret. It all started at the beginning of the summer when I made a passion fruit Kolsch for my wife. I'm not a fan of fruit beers, but my wife is, and I like a challenge. So I gave it a shot, and it turned out, well, my wife and others liked it a lot. That said, my wife doesn't drink that much, so I still had a couple gallons of this beer sitting around at the end of October. This year was also one of those birthdays that end in a zero for my wife, and we had a big, outside, and appropriately socially distanced party for her. She wanted me to brew a beer to serve, and she asked for a chocolate stout. Mmm! Fast forward to the day of the party. The stout is kegged, and I see an opportunity to get rid of the rest of the fruit beer. I'll serve both at the party. Well, my keys are as bigger than I can get in my car. Well, as you get older, that happens.
Yeah, yeah. Go on a low-salt diet.
If your keyser gets too big for your car. Yeah. So I can't take the one with the three taps. I have a mini fridge I use for a fermentation chamber usually, but in a former life is a one-tap kegerator. I see a few things I can do to make it a two-tap system and take the opportunity. Problem one, I can get two kegs in there, but only two specific kegs will fit. My stout is in a keg with a bigger rubber bottom.
Well, no wonder.
you got a big keyser and a bigger rubber bottom that won't fit with another keg. So I made a jumper.
You got to get the Studebaker out.
Moving right along. Yeah. So I made that's a Muppets reference. So I made a jumper and pushed the stout into the correct keg using CO2 and a low PSI. There must have been enough turbulence, even with the low PSI, to knock out a lot of the CO2 out of solution, because eventually I looked down to see tons of foam coming out of the pressure release valve. Oh, and did I mention I was doing this while the kegs were in the keyser? So that was an extra mess and spilled beer number one. Later, when I got the kegs and fridge to the party location, I struggled putting everything together. Eventually, I got all the lines in the tower and the kegs in the fridge. The shanks aren't tightening perfectly, but I figure it'll be okay. Nobody likes a loose shank. I connected the beer line to the first keg and look up to see beer spraying out of the shank in a stream that hit the picnic table several feet away. If you caught it, yes, the beer was spraying from the shank because I had not yet put the tap on. That was one thing that's helpful when you're kegging. You know, the thing is, that is built to close the system and actually keep the beer in the keg until you want it. I probably only lost a pint of the Kolsch before I got the line disconnected, but still, spilled beer number two. I clean up and get the taps on. I try again with the stout and connect the beer line. Beer comes leaking out of the tap. Spilled beer number three. I disconnect the beer line and try to figure out what's wrong. I looked into the bag I'd had the taps in and realized I'd forgot to put the O-rings back that fit between the tap and the shank. Once I took the taps off and put the O-rings back in, I connected the beer line a third time, and beer comes pouring out the tap. This time it was because the tap handle was pulled forward and I hadn't noticed. Spill beer number four. Finally, I got everything put together without further mishap, cleaned up, and taped the printed labels on top of the fridge so people would know which beer was which and tap. Fast forward a few hours to the party. The first person to pour a beer goes for the Kolsch. They pour it and comment that the beer looks really dark for a Kolsch.
Oh, no.
Turns out I had mixed up my tap lines, which I had labeled during the chaos of putting together the tap. So we switched the labels, and that was thankfully the last unexpected fiasco of the evening. Oh, and the stout was a new recipe for me that I didn't get a chance to try until the party, so serving that blind was one potential disaster that thankfully was a non-issue because it was delicious. Yay.
All's well that ends well.
I guess. Ends up but on here's, the floor.
But here's the thing, though. I mean, I hear countless kegging disasters, and yet everybody tells me how easy kegging is. Because I've been doing this a long time, and I'm still mostly a bottler. I still mostly bottle beers, although I do keg, but mostly I bottle beers. I've never once taken a cooler full of bottled beers and had them spray all over the party. It's just not happened.
You better knock some wood.
Yeah.
Okay. This next one is a multimedia experience here.
Oh, good.
This is from John, who ordered a logbook, and in the I always send a note saying, you know, the logbook's on the way. Thanks for your support and all that. And John responded. Said, before the days of your logbook, I used a plain old spiral notebook. I actually have my first brew recorded January 23rd, 1994. My wife recorded the following note. Johnny put his hands in the wort three times. Susie felt this was poor, sterile technique. She suggested using a measuring cup, sanitized, of course, to acquire a sample for hydrometer reading. So he's just like dipping in with his hands like it's the old spring on gun smoke.
Well.
And she said, she ended the note by saying, this worked much better for eliminating massive bubbles. John says, my wife Suzanne had just earned her bachelor in microbiology.
I thought she was going to be an ER nurse.
John says, all three of my kids, the youngest is now 18, have helped me on brew days over the years. If you want to see one of my greatest achievements, cough, cough, disasters, watch this. It's fun. And then he put a link to a YouTube video. If you want to see the video, search on YouTube, A Beery Scary Night. But I put together, I edited some audio from the video, and I sent it to Steve, and now Steve is going to listen to it for the first time.
Oh, okay. This is the one.
So you got the email there in front of you, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay.
So now you want me to listen to it?
Yeah. Are you ready to hit play?
Yeah.
It looks like the blast radius extends probably about 12 or 13 feet from the origin of the explosion. You can see that there's fragments that basically go out in concentric circles from the point of the blast. There's litter strewn about, dotting the floor. It extends out throughout the kitchen, all over the entire countertops, into the morning room. I haven't seen the damage yet on the other side of the island. You can see that the base of the apparatus is left intact. It's funny, even where the hose goes into the bowl, there was no disturbance. I had taken out the aerator and put the hose into a bowl because the violence of the ongoing reaction was so strong earlier this evening. Once I'm able to get myself closer to the actual point of the explosion, I can only surmise that what I'm going to find there at the very base is something clogging the pipe that can only explain what's happened here tonight. It is 1:30 in the morning on March 24th. I was woken up to an awful, horrible explosion of a rattling sound. You can see that even the ceiling itself has not gotten away from this horrible event.
Well, that sounds like copy from the miniseries Chernobyl.
The video, and I'll send you a link to the video later. The videos of first, it's of the kitchen. It's late at night, and you see the kitchen floor, and there are like splotches of stuff on the kitchen floor. And he's walking into the, and then it pans up or tilts up, and there's the remains of a glass, broken glass fermenter on the countertop. And then he tilts up further, and there's splotches on the ceiling. So if you've got beer on the ceiling, mark your bingo cards.
Yeah. Wow.
But I thought he captured the trying not to wake up the wife and kids, you know, aspect of the whole disaster.
It was very, very intense. Really, it was like. It really did. I flash back to the guys going through the tunnels in Chernobyl. or the sheriff in Stranger Things, like going into the Upside Down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that.
go. And I'll put a link to that video out there on the socials and stuff, probably. Colin says, Colin from Minneapolis says, hi, James and Mr. Wilkes. You get the Mr. Treatment. Please vicariously enjoy my wonderful endeavors of brewing with a young family. Colin says, after spending 9 months of almost but not quite alcohol abstinence in solidarity with my pregnant wife, I decided to have a brew day celebration with extended family for my birthday. The plan was to brew a nice, dry, brute IPA because somehow, like a sober ostrich with its head in the sand, we had missed the whole fad and couldn't get our hands on commercial examples. Smash cut to, did you know that glucoamylase and amyloglucodase are pretty much the same word after a 120 shilling export scotch ale?
I did, actually.
Says, I'm not very good at multitasking, especially when a little buzzard. Oh, when a little. a little buzzed. I wouldn't know anything about that. While reading about enzymes with family talking to me. Let's just say the mystery vials of liquid did not experience optimum temperatures to work their magic. I may as well have been reading the instructions for the glucosamine hip supplement we gave to our dog. Colin says, oh, well, let it ride. After bubbling away at what sugars the yeast could consume and not touching the residual sugars with a dextrin-length pole, it was time to bottle. The night before bottling, I moved the carboy up to the kitchen to settle all the trub before siphoning. This proved to be pointless, as I decided to siphon with a screaming one-month-old strapped to my chest. Remember how I'm not good at multitasking? I pretty much immediately stuck the end of the siphon right into the middle of the gunk. A yelling baby and a chest carrier does not equate to a nice, calm transfer. Let's just say I've always wondered if you can dry hop in the bottle. Don't try it. It's not good. In fact, it's really gross. The hops create nucleation points for CO2, which stirs up anything that had settled in the bottle. Hefeweizens may have intentional yeasties in the glass, but sadly does not apply to brute IPA with hops. The batch never got an official name, but I forever refer to it as my bottle-hopped, not-so-brute IPA, best served through a strainer. He says, P.S., do I have Steve's permission to name a batch Teletubby Tummy Party?
Absolutely.
He used that term to describe a beer in an archive show, and I can't get that wonderful alliteration out of my head. What's up with him and Teletubbies?
Hey, my son loved Teletubbies, and I've watched many episodes.
Our older son had Teletubbies too. There was Lala and Poe.
Yeah,
and the others.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of hip. I mean, I would like to have been a writer on that show because I think they were doing some really good acid. Just like, okay, get the Teletubbies out, man. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably interesting show to watch when you're so inclined.
Chemically. Yeah, no kidding.
Beer number three. Have you tried beer number three?
No, I haven't.
Ooh. This may be the mystery beer. There's a lot going on with that.
Yeah. Mine's gone a little flat. I wish I hadn't poured it so early, to be honest. Hmm. It's warmed up. Mine's at about room temperature, and I wish it wasn't. Though it's nice. It's clear as a bell.
Yes.
It's real pretty. I'm kind of swirling a head back up in it, so it's still carbonated. It's real fruity.
Very fruity.
And
there's an earthiness too that mm-hmm. I can't put my finger on.
Mm. Earthy, fruity. I get kind of I don't really get tropical fruits. I get more berries, like perhaps raspberry, even blackberry.
Or strawberry.
I get kind of berries and maybe a little bit of stone fruit, like peaches or apricots.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I don't get mango. I don't get passion fruit. I don't get a citrus fruit. And I don't get a citrus hop from it either, really. So it's very, and it has quite a bit of mouthfeel. It's got quite a bit of unfermented sugar in it of some form, some kind of dextrin or I don't know what. But it's very tasty. And I can't decide if it's a sour beer or not, meaning if it had some lacto in it, the lacto's not expressing itself in a sour way. You know, if it had too much hops to not let it sour.
There's a teeny bit of tartness to it, and I can't tell if that's like a teeny bit of astringency from like a fruit kind of a thing.
Right. That's what I mean. I can't put my finger on it.
It's not bad. It's tasty. I like it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I almost want to say that. I almost feel like it's a lacto beer that the lacto didn't really do its job. And so it's just a little bit tart, but that's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm completely making that up, but that's nice. And I do wish that I hadn't let mine I wish it was just a little bit colder and I hadn't let it go flat.
Yeah.
But that's on me. That's not the beer's fault. It's tasty. Nice. Yeah, it's real tasty.
So we'll wait and open the envelope in a little bit.
Yeah, sounds great. Hey, you want to hear my brewing disasters?
Yes,
I have two.
I'll take a break while you talk.
Well, I have two. I have one that's a customer. I won't tell you who it is, but a customer was new to the brewing world, and then I have one of my own personal. But I had a customer that was new to brewing, and this would have been probably his first batch ever, but it might have been his second, but I think it was his first batch ever. And it came time to bottle his beer, and he wasn't sure what to use for priming sugar. He'd forgotten or gotten mixed up a little bit. And he called me, and he said that his beer was a little bit thick, and he was a little bit concerned because when he bottled it, it was you know, he was bottling it, and it was a little bit thick, and he wasn't quite sure. And I said, well, what did you use? Did you use honey? Did you use corn sugar? Did you use table sugar? What did you use for your bottling sugar? And I lied. He just used that stuff he had in his kitchen cabinet. It looked it. He got it out and he said, well, it's just cornstarch. I said, oh,
he made a roux.
Yeah. I said, stir it for 20 minutes till it gets dark and add shrimp. Actually, what I told him to do was I told him, don't give up on it. I said, I said there's nothing in there to it's actually not really thickening, is it? It's probably settling right out. And he said, yeah, it just doesn't want to do anything. And I said, all right, so go ahead and get in your kitchen cabinet, and this time get sugar. That's all he had handy. I said, so get 3/4 of a cup of just plain old table sugar, put that in the pan, heat it up for about 5 minutes, put it into your beer, stir it all up real well, and bottle your beer. And then let it set for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then when you drink your beer, you should be able to decant the beer away from the starch.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to do that, and he said the beer was delicious.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we saved the beer. It wasn't the end of the world, but it's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life as far as homebrewing. When he called me up, so what'd you use? Well, it's just stuff called cornstarch. So it does matter. And then my story. So this happened to me, and this happened about not quite a year ago. It happened last, I don't know, February or March. And so I was brewing, and I was brewing quite a bit at that time. And I brewed 2 beers, both of which we're now beginning to drink a little bit. And but it was also at the exact same time when I was beginning to be sick with these blood clots and things that I've been living with. And I didn't know that. Of course, this wasn't diagnosed at the time. But I was beginning to do goofy things. So I brewed these beers, and I took notes, but my notes were completely garbled.
Mm.
I mean, completely nonsensical. And so I wrote down, like, on the carboys, I recorded the original gravities, but I wrote them wrong. I wrote them backwards on each carboy. And so I had the 1092 beer on the 1074 beer, I think is 1074. I had everything backwards. And when I came time to think about bottling them or moving them along, and I started taking gravity readings and tasting them and looking back at my notes, I said, that beer doesn't have cherry juice in it. I don't understand. Why does it say that? I don't. And that beer says it has smoked malt in it, and I don't taste any smoked malt in that. I don't understand. I mean, I could not have mixed these. It's like I was completely delirious. So it took me some weeks to forensically figure out what I had actually brewed. And the beers are fine. Both beers are good. But I just never have done anything. It's like, who knows what the heck I actually brewed, really.
Good luck replicating that.
Yeah, exactly. I think I probably wrote down what's really in them pretty much, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I remember you texting me with a picture of this beer. There's a beer in my fridge.
Yeah,
I don't remember what it is, but it tastes good.
yeah. So there are 3 beers involved, and I couldn't figure out which were which, and actually the one in the fridge, I had no, I didn't have any recollection of making that one. I just knew I'd made it and it was in there. And so as it turns out, I think I'm pretty sure certain it's a Belgian pale ale, but the jury's still out on that. So, and we have yet to bottle or keg that. It's been lagering now for what, about 4 or 5 months?
It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
It'll be nice and clear.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, you can see right through it. Real easy.
So we still got a stack of letters here. This is going to be the longest show in history.
Well, let's move through it.
Jacob says, "We were awakened by a loud noise during the night. I investigated, but found the kids and dog were all fine, so returned to bed. This was at our old house, and we had a freight train that ran through our yard about 40 meters from our bedroom, so when things went bump in the night, we usually rolled over and kept on sleeping. I woke up a little early for work and decided to make a cup of coffee and relax a bit before heading out. My pregnant wife and two kids were still snoozing, so I tried to be extra quiet as I crept into the kitchen. I grabbed a mug off our shelf and put it down on the stove. It made an ominous, quiet splash. That's odd, I thought to myself, and flicked on the main lights. The stove had a pool of what looked to be soy sauce on it. That's even more odd, I thought. We didn't have Chinese last night. My pre-coffee brain struggled to decipher what had happened as I looked from the pool of brown liquid on the stove to the pool of brown liquid on the floor and the spray of brown droplets on the wall behind the stove. Suddenly, I clued in and pulled open the cabinet over the stove. Staring back at me was the bottom 2 inches of a 750-milliliter swing-top bottle. I had brewed an Irish cream stout a few weeks earlier and split it into 3 batches, flavoring them at bottling separately, one with vanilla extract and a small amount of xylitol sweetener, the other with espresso coffee, and the last plain. After bottling and storing all the bottles in the garage, I found some plain stout left during cleanup. Feeling a little lazy and not wanting to brave the cold garage, I bottled it in a swing top and stuck it out of the way in the cabinet over the stove. Apparently, the rapid heating and cooling cycles over the past few weeks had caused the carbonation to take off rapidly. I did my best to clean up as quietly as possible, but after a few minutes of Lysoling, mopping, and collecting scattered glass, I turned to find my darling wife in the kitchen doorway surveying the mess. She laughed and sent me off to work and finished cleaning it up for me. So check box for understanding spouse. Lesson learned, never store conditioning bottles in the kitchen, especially not over the stove. Beer turned out great. The espresso addition and secondary really works great. Thanks to Basic Brewing for the recommendation. Well, there you go. Thanks, Jacob. Yeah, I had my first bottle bomb. We had a little bitty house, and it had a little bitty closet where the washer and dryer were, and then a smaller closet where I put my beer stuff in that in the laundry quote laundry room. And in the summer, that room got really hot when the dryer, especially when the dryer was going. And so that's when I had my first bottle bomb, was when that room was really hot. So take care of your conditioning beers.
Yeah.
Troy says, so I started heating up my strike water in my foundry this morning about 8:15 to brew an alt beer. While I was heating up, I decided I could multitask and change out the impeller kit on our dishwasher. Ah, more home appliances. All was going well until I disconnected the water line to the dishwasher. In my haste, I turned off the cold water and not the hot water to the dishwasher. I now had a hot water hose spraying water all over the kitchen. Of course, the hot water valve under the sink was too tight to turn, so off across the yard I ran to shut off the water at the street. Finally get all the water cleaned up and decide it would be a good time now to mash in the alt. Mashed in, changed out the impeller, recirculated my mash, and mashed out. It was now that I realized that I forgot to add my brewing salts. I quickly grabbed the refractometer to check my gravity. I'm at 1050 before the boil, so I decide to continue on. At this point, I notice that my 5-year-old is not around, and I have a fire burning some limbs and trees I cut down. Troy is multitasking. As I ran around the side of the house, I see him pulling burning branches out of the fire to throw them back on the other side of the pile. After I wrestle him away from the fire, I decided that today is not the day to multitask. I finished the boil and am about to pitch my yeast. As most of my beers have a Navy or submarine-related title, this alt will be called Flooding in the Galley. Oh, by the way, the impeller kit did not fix my problem with the dishwasher. So you got your brewing, you got your home repair, you got your babysitting, you got your burning the brush
with the baby.
Well, 5-year-old.
Well, yeah.
In our perspective, it's a baby.
Yeah.
Niles from Massachusetts. Says, I thought my only brewing disaster for this year was going to be that I hadn't brewed as much as I'd like to, but here we are. I kept things simple, and I brewed a small 2-gallon batch using DME, which I thought I had enough on hand, but I only had a pound or half a pound. The search for quick fermentables was on. I was planning on using this brew as an opportunity to grow some dregs from bottles I had been stepping up over the past few months that are Belgian strains. So I thought maybe some table sugar would be an obvious choice and grabbed half a cup of that. I then remembered that I had a good amount of wheat middlings. Do you know what wheat middlings are?
I don't, but they sound English.
Well, Niles is from Massachusetts, so.
Well, he could have an English background.
That's true. It is New England, after all.
Yeah, you get a bowl of wheat middlings and some and some fatty bacon and some grilled tomatoes.
Just keep your ferret away from it.
That's right.
I had a good amount of wheat middlings and thought, oh, what the heck. So I thought a pound and a half of that, yep, you read that right, would maybe help me out. And, this is supposed to be a small batch. Wheat middlings are not the same as DME. I repeat, wheat middlings are not the same as DME. This may seem obvious to everyone, and if I had really thought about it, I would have also said to anyone else, yeah, probably don't do that. But I was in a hurry and succumbed to the idea it could be a neat experiment. The mash, if you can call it, was like making thin pancake batter and completely burned the bottom of my kettle, which is currently sitting in a high concentrate of PBW. The boil, if you can call it, overflowed pretty quickly. But thankfully, I got it to the sink in time. At this point, any normal person would probably dump it all and call it a loss, but I pressed on for the sake of experimentation. I put it in 2 1-gallon fermenters and decided not to use my dregs, but rather some 4-year-old expired dry yeast packets I had in my fridge.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah.
Now says, thankfully, I was wise enough to put it in a plastic laundry bin in case it overflowed a little. A little is an understatement. Within a couple hours, the airlocks were bubbling away, so I'm glad that the yeast worked. An hour after that, I saw the airlocks starting to fill with wort, and then a couple hours after that, the airlocks were nowhere to be seen. The fermenters were overflowing and even got some on our textured spackle ceiling. That is not easy to clean. I now called it a loss and dumped everything on our compost pile and cleaned up. I'll try again this weekend, but we'll stick to an all-grain batch. And then he sent in photos of these fermenters with this glop in it that doesn't even look like anything I've brewed on my weird experiments. And that's saying something.
I got to Google what wheat middlings is.
Wheat middlings. Well, while you're doing that, let's have a word from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave at High Gravity in Tulsa. You know, Steve and I both love our Warthog electric brew-in-a-bag systems from highgravitybrew.com. Do you still love yours, Steve?
I love it more than life itself.
I tell you, ever since, when we first heard about electric brewing, you and I both kind of scoffed about it, I think. It was like, what? Nothing beats propane. Nothing beats gas.
Nothing beats gas. Well, yeah, because, a couple of enchiladas and you got it. But
and the old saying was never, now you're cooking with electric.
Right, exactly. Well, I don't know. Electric sounded to me like. Actually, it sounded slow, and in my reckoning, it sounded like you stuck a heating pad underneath your pot and hope for the best.
But that is not the case. It is effective in the controller, the Warthog controller. I've been saying lately that it's kind of like having a buddy to brew with you that stays out by the kettle and watches the temperature on the mash. And then keeps the boil steady, and you don't have to worry about, the wind blowing all the heat away from your propane burner. You don't have to worry about running out of propane halfway through. It's amazing.
It's the Warthog controller is the genius.
Yeah. And Dave builds them himself. They're in the back of the high gravity store there, and they are battle proven because they also use the Warthog controllers on the professional brewing system that they have there at Pippin's Tap Room. So, and other breweries use their systems, especially for, you know, like pilot brewing systems and things like that. And if you go to highgravitybrew.com, you can find an electric brewing system to fit your need, whether it's, you know, like a single vessel brew in a bag system like we have, or two vessel systems, or even three vessel systems. They've got configurations to fit your needs.
Yep.
They're super good to work with and really awesome folks. So we can't say enough for our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from HighGravityBrew.com. Family owned and operated, HighGravityBrew.com. There you go.
Yeah. Good folks.
Emil from, I'm not sure what, there's umlauts over his address and stuff. So, from Stockholm, Sweden. Emil says, earlier this year, I brewed a hydromel mead using Voss Kvike yeast and local honey. When bottling, I decided to sweeten and prime with tropical juice concentrate. I poured the concentrate into my bottling bucket and then added all my mead. It turns out I had forgotten to check the seal around the bucket spigot and soon found myself panicking while trying to tighten it.
Yeah.
Fidgeting with the spigot only makes things worse. And I quickly had to grab a non-sanitized funnel and fill my bottles as best I could while spilling mead all over my kitchen. All in all, I managed to fill 6 bottles, which I considered a win under the circumstances. After a week, I decided to pasteurize my remaining bottles to stop fermentation. It turns out filling bottles in a panic makes for uneven levels, and I ended up with 2 bottle bombs and showering my kitchen in mead.
Oh, man.
The bottles that survived turned out great. So it's a shame that almost half of the batch ended up on the floor.
Boy, that's too bad.
Sorry to hear about that.
Nothing worse than the leaky spigot. I mean, there just isn't. I've had that happen to me too.
The leaky spigot.
Yeah,
there's a prescription for that, I'm pretty sure.
Well, there is, and then you can also get these things called Depends, and if you get a leaky spigot, But actually, I did. I had a beer. I think I was bottling a beer. I'm pretty sure it was a beer, I made the fatal mistake of not checking. You really should check. You really should take the extra step when you get your bottling bucket ready to go, of filling that bottling bucket with enough water to make sure that thing is sealed and it's not going to leak on you. So, you know, it takes a few minutes, and you might burn through, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 gallons of water, but boy, is it worth it. Because you're going to do it with beer if you don't do it with water. And I ended up, I was fortunate. I remember this clear as a bell, because I had to sanitize my arm, which I did. And I stuck my arm down in there, and I re-screwed the spigot on. I eventually got it stuck, you know, eventually fixed it. But what a friggin' mess. Okay.
Thanks.
See, the reason that
thanks, Emil.
Thanks, Emil. And but I've made all these mistakes. That's why stores like mine exist. We've made these mistakes. We know.
And we're passing the savings on to you.
That's right. We've suffered for this, Art. Now it's your turn. By the way, Wheat Midlands are they're fine particles of bran, short, germ, flour, and other fractions created during the wheat milling process. So it's the flotsam and jetsam of the milling process.
It's the pressed peanut sweepings of
yeah.
Pressed peanut sweepings.
64 ounces of cheese. I think I'm blind.
But I'm so sweet and tasty.
they're actually mostly used in horse feed.
Oh, well. There you go.
So, yeah, that's what. So now we know what Wheat Midlands are. See, yeah. We've learned something.
See,
tonight.
It's educational.
Yeah.
Blake says, this isn't a quote-unquote disaster per se, but it may be instructive for others. Oh, we'll be the judge of that. I recently had my first serious brewing failure, nearly 100 batches of homebrew. First batch I ever had to dump. It was a fruit sour. I split the wort, making a nice IPA out of the other half, but in the non-standard routine of doing that, I forgot to boil the wort to sterilize it before pitching my lactobacillus. After souring, the wort had a slight vomit smell. But my nose is not so good, so I went ahead with the boil and pitched my yeast, hoping I was imagining the smell. The fermentation never seemed to take off, but that might just have been a coincidence. After 3 weeks of wimpy fermentation, I decided to bottle it. Luckily, I tasted it before going to the trouble. It had a strong vomit flavor. Down the drain it went. I had brewed that recipe twice before and once since, and all those turned out to be excellent. So skipping the boil before the lactose seems to have been the problem. Brew and learn.
Yeah.
So slight vomit turned into strong vomit. Jimmy from San Pedro, California. For your consideration, The Tale of the Wedding Brewsmen, working title. While not exactly a disaster story on the brewing side of things, this is a disastrous tale of serving homebrew at a wedding. COVID disclaimer, all described events occurred in the before time. It all started when one of my very best friends, Andrew, asked me and another homebrewer friend of ours, Bob, to be groomsmen. The event was scheduled in about 6 months at Andrew's fiancé's family property in Napa Valley, California. Woo-hoo.
Yeah.
And about 200 people were expected to attend. Within minutes of being asked to join the wedding party, Bob pitched the idea that he and I should supply all the beer for the reception.
Oh boy.
On paper, it sounded great. It would be a tremendous help to the couple and be an excuse for all of us to get together for a weekend marathon brew session. So the deal was made, and after some quick discussion, the required volume and styles were decided. Bob and I would supply 15 gallons of homebrew each, 3 corny kegs. Bob committed to 5 gallons of IPA and 10 gallons of brown ale, while I decided on 5 gallons of pale ale and 10 gallons of wit. Brew weekend went off without a hitch, and everything was on schedule for the wedding weekend. A couple days prior to the big day, Bob made a run to the local homebrew store and bought all new tubing, picnic taps, manifolds, and hose clamps necessary to connect 4 kegs to a single CO2 bottle. We cut and assembled the serving gear just before Andrew picked everything up and drove it 6 hours north of Napa. We did not pressure check any of the connections beforehand. Foreshadowing.
Oh.
Fast forward to the day of the wedding. Bob and I arrived at the venue early, dressed in our formal attire, to find all 6 of the kegs stored in an un-air-conditioned workshop on a hot summer day, around 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Not ideal. We quickly made efforts to get the kegs into tubs of ice. It was also at this time we decided to test our serving gear. As you might be expecting at this point, we pressurized the brown ale keg first, and several connections immediately came loose. Beer rocketed across the workshop. We scrambled to disconnect the gas and immediately searched for our bodies for damage. I walked away unscathed, but not, the same could not be said for Bob's crotch. A large brown stain covered the front of his gray suit pants, and pre-ceremony photos were planned in less than an hour. Bob immediately stripped off his pants, grabbed a water hose, and attempted to flush the brown ale out. Boy, that sentence taken out of context.
Oh, God.
Your Honor, Bob immediately stripped off his pants, grabbed a water hose, and attempted to flush the brown ale out. He then laid his trousers in the sun on some hedges and went to work tightening hose clamps in his boxer shorts. Eventually, all the kegs were properly connected and things were looking good. The beer was chilled, pressurized, and ready for the bartenders working the event, and the wet spot on Bob's trousers was just about gone. No one was the wiser. Fast forward again to after the photo shoot. Most of the wedding party were in the yard killing time while the guests filtered in. When a stranger approached Bob, he calmly introduced himself as one of the beer servers hired for the reception and then casually mentioned that he thinks the beer is leaking from one of our kegs. The scene upon our arrival was a puddle of IPA spread across a concrete floor, slowly draining through a crack in the foundation. We checked the keg, and to our horror, it was nearly empty. We never even got to try a pint. The shop floor, which belongs to the father of the bride, was now sticky with evaporating beer. Bob and I agreed this isn't worth mentioning to anyone right now and would only lead to unnecessary stress. We then attempted a half-ass cleanup and moved the remaining homebrew to the bar area. It was smooth sailing after that. The ceremony was beautiful, and all the beer we managed to not spray on the ground or Bob's pants was completely consumed by the end of the night. Despite the marginal success, I'm probably not going to jump at the chance to brew for a wedding. Next time, I'll limit it to the bachelor party. Boy, that's with you being a musician, I'm sure the weddings. I've shot a video for a couple of weddings, and never again. Weddings are
They're never good.
Stressful, very stressful.
Yeah.
Greg from Ramona, California. It's May 2nd, the virtual Big Brew Day 2020. I've taken the pledge with the American Homebrewers Association to brew a beer for that day. The beer is going to be a holiday ale with honey and spices that should be ready for the holiday season. My wife has decided to help with the brew, which is exciting, a first. It's also a chance to try out my new pump on my electric kettle setup. I heat the strike water and start adding grains while she stirs. Everything's going great. All the grains are in the kettle with no dough balls. Woohoo! Time to start my new pump. I get a few spritz of wort, then nothing. I look at the tubing lines and see there are grains inside the lines from the kettle to the pump and from pump to the recirculating tubing. What the heck? I look on the workbench, a nice, shiny, clean malt pipe. This is basically like the bag and brew in a bag, but with metal. So it's basically this fine mesh colander that you're supposed to put the mash in. So Greg had apparently left, he says, I had basically left out the bag on my brew in a bag system. What to do? Mm-hmm. I know I will break out my old cooler mash tun, pour the mash into it so I can put the malt pipe in. I grab the cooler and pour the mash into it. Oh, look, the village idiot, that would be me, had forgotten to put the false bottom into the cooler mash tun. A few choice words later, and I just dump the whole mash back into the original kettle. Now with the malt pipe installed and check my temperature, I'm surprised that is not as bad as I thought it would be. I turn the kettle back on and start the pump, and all goes well from that point on. The beer turns out great, and I'm enjoying one as I write this letter. And Greg doesn't say if his wife ever tried to help again. Honey, is it going to be like this every time?
Now, the thing is, though, now I want to question this. I may call a BS on this.
Uh-oh.
Because this is not really a disaster.
Well,
this is I call this a brewing inconvenience. because all turned out well. There was no broken glass. No one bled.
That's true.
Nothing was permanently damaged.
It's just a well-traveled wort or a mash.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to open the envelope for the beers.
That sounds great.
From Scott Housel. Here we go.
Okay.
Sis boom ba. What is the sound of it? Oh, go ahead.
Sis boom ba.
What is the sound of an exploding sheep? I've used that one on the show before. That's one of my favorites. Okay, number one is the Savvy Blanket, a hoppy pale ale, an experiment inspired by New Zealand's Sauvignon Blanc. Not intended to be hazy, but intended not to not be either. ABV 6.5%, yeast Imperial Viking, fermented at 85 degrees Fahrenheit. Oh, the hops were Hollow Tower Blanc and Nelson Sauvin, which both are supposed to have that winey character. Fermentables, Pilsner malt, flaked wheat, and turbinado sugar. Oh. So that was number one.
Yeah, that was a good beer.
Very tasty. Yeah. Very nice. And very, I'm going to stick with the, it's very hop samplerish.
Yeah, I thought it was. And and hop sampler-ish and NIPA-ish.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number two is Saison the Eighth, which is a kettle sour Saison split batch part A. Soured with good belly shots, like we've used.
Okay.
The yeast was the Lalemant Belle Saison, fermented at 75 degrees Fahrenheit, hops Cascade, fermentables, yep. Pilsner malt, two row, he says, per Steve, I can call it that, I think. we give him permission to call it two row.
Yeah.
And flaked wheat. So that was number two.
Yep.
I'm going to taste it again. Very nice.
Yeah.
I like that quite a bit. Okay. Yeah. Now, three was Saison the Eighth, the Kettle Sour Saison Split Batch Part B. Same as above, but with rosemary from my garden tincture added at bottling.
Okay.
So it's the same beer as number two, only with the rosemary tincture added. You know, that it's that earthy thing that I was that mentioned. That's the earthy note that.
Yep.
And now that the beer is warm, you can really smell that rosemary character.
Yep, I sure do.
But it really changed the beer.
It changed it a lot. I wouldn't have gotten that it was the same beer at all.
It muted the perception of sourness.
It did. And I even think it, well, let me do a little more tasting here. So, of course, now that it's been planted in my brain, I can smell the rosemary.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it would have been fun, though we missed the opportunity, for you to have said, hey, Steve, now, you know, and not told me, and then try to make me guess what the smell was. I mean, that's completely insane, but I really can smell it.
Mm-hmm. It's tasty. I gotta say that I like the number two better than the number three, though.
I do, too. That's the other thing I was going to say, is that number three, the rosemary, what I think it does is I think that, well, rosemary is a very strong herb, and it's very dominant. The other thing is that it has a lot of oil in it.
Mm.
And so the rosemary oil has completely, my bottle of it has zero head retention of any kind.
Huh.
So it doesn't, there, you know, it can't keep it up. And
there's a drug for that too.
I mean that strictly in the brewing sense. And it seems to have muted the hops.
Yeah. It's taken over the flavors. The head on mine, the foam, it sticks around for a bit, but it dissipates fairly quickly.
Yeah, I don't have any head. I mean, I've got a little bit of lacing, so I guess it's not completely gone. But and
I mean, it's a pleasant beer.
Yeah, it is. It's just when I go back to number two, I like it better. It's a more complete beer.
Yeah. Number three, there's a perfumey aspect, that earthy kind of thing, and then there's a perfumey kind of a thing. And not in a hop kind of perfume, but it's more of an herbal kind of perfume.
Yeah. So, fun
experiment, though.
Fun experiment.
And it's not a bad beer.
No, it's not terrible.
I'm going to drink, like, after we get off of here, I'm going to drink the rest of the bottle. But
right. Yeah. So I don't know if cutting it back a little bit more or maybe. I don't know what. You've done some rosemary beers that I thought were really good.
Yeah, I did that rosemary IPA.
Yeah, and then we were at a homebrew con some years ago. This could be going back 7 or 8 years. I'm not even sure. But I remember a man brewed a gruit, and his primary flavoring herb was rosemary.
Mm.
And it was absolutely out of this world.
Yeah.
So I don't know what else he had done or how he had treated it, but I just remember him being, you know, rightfully proud of the beer and telling me a lot about it. And I was like, wow, I had no idea. And I didn't miss the hops at all. So,
I got to say, my favorite, though, was the number one, just because I'm just in the mood for a nice hoppy ale.
You know, mine was too. And of the three, as we've been sitting here talking, I don't have any more number one. I drank the whole beer. And so, yeah, I really liked number one. It was just perfect. It was just a nice, hoppy, you know, kind of American pale ale, a little cloudy. That was good. And I liked it.
Yeah. So thanks again to Scott Hazel from South Florida for sending those in. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. Adds a new dimension. No, we've got three more.
Three more? This is truly encapsulating the year 2020.
It never ends. It is the longest show in the archives. Okay. Phil from Cumming, Georgia says, this happened a couple of years ago, but I initially thought it wasn't disastrous enough to send in. After the following disaster show, I realized that this was at least as disastrous as many that you read, so why not? Phil says, I brewed a porter recipe that I'd been pretty pleased with in the past. This time, however, I changed up the yeast to Burton ale yeast for the first time. I'd certainly heard of the Burton Union system, so it should have dawned on me that this particular yeast would probably have an aggressive croizen requiring a blow-off tube. Foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. I was used to just switching to a blow-off if necessary, but generally just went with an airlock. Anyway, brew day went fine, and on Sunday morning I was getting ready to leave on a five-day work trip. He says, work trips, the good old days. I thought it would be wise to check on my beer before leaving, and when I went into the garage, I was surprised to not hear the typical bubbling of an airlock. I was even more surprised when I opened my fermentation fridge to see the airlock full of croizen with some leaking around the edge of the stopper. Well, I better clean this up a little. I'd hate to leave my wife home with a mess, I thought, as I reached in to grab the airlock and stopper. Can you predict what happened?
Yep.
As I wiggled it loose, the next thing I heard was a loud pop. I'm still not sure if it was the sound of the pressure releasing from the carboy or my fist, airlock in hand, hitting the top of the fridge. What seemed to be several gallons of beer immediately foamed out of the carboy and onto the garage floor. I quickly grabbed what towels I could and shouted for help from my hope-to-be understanding wife. We eventually got it under control and mopped up, and I still ended up with 3 to 4 gallons of delicious porter. Bingo square, helpful spouse, Phil says. I'm really glad I was in the habit of leaving early for work trips. Now I always start with a blow-off, if there's any doubt whatsoever. I shudder to think about what would have happened if I hadn't checked on it. Yeah, no kidding. And there would have been a muffled thump from the from the fridge. Thanks for the show. I've listened more this year than I have in a while as COVID got my brewing career going again. That's a great story involving my neighborhood that I'll have to share sometime. Thanks, Phil. I appreciate that. Tom, a.k.a. Hypobrew on YouTube, says, I'd like to share my story as a cautionary tale to other homebrewing listeners of the podcast. I'm sending this story a week after my brewing disaster happened because I wasn't able to type it out on brew day. Don't worry, you'll figure it out soon. Uh-oh. My brew day was going well enough as I was trying out a new pump. Since it's a new pump, I wanted to go through the motions laid out in the manual. Yes, I'm one of those folks that does the RTFM, or read the effing manual. As I was chilling down my Belgian Pater's beer and using the new pump, I wanted to reread the cleaning procedures for my new piece of equipment. It recommends that you clean the pump by circulating a PBW in water solution heated to about 120 degrees. Hey, that's easy enough. I already have my propane burner out, and I'll heat it up after I clean my converted keg. After I got the word in the fermenter, I cleaned up the keg and dumped some water in it. I then added my PBW and heated the solution to 120 degrees and fired up the pump. It took a little bit of time to get the keg back up to temperature because the groundwater was cold, but no worries. After cleaning the pump, I took the keg off my burner by grabbing the handles on the top with my right hand and brought it over to the spot in my yard to dump out the PBW in water. As one typically would, I grabbed the bottom of the keg to tip it over with my left hand. my bare left hand. As a heavy dose of shock came over me, I realized that the bottom of my keg was still really hot because I had heated up that cold groundwater and I didn't have to cool down the liquid inside the keg to pitching temp. As I looked at my hand, I realized that cleaning my pump in this fashion is new to my brew day and I soon wouldn't forget it. Why? Because the tip of my pinky, index, middle, and part of my pointer fingers had already started to develop blisters. Big white blisters, and the fingers were beet red. And I still had to finish cleaning up. After weaving a tapestry of obscenity that is still over the Atlantic Ocean, a la the old man in A Christmas Story, I single-handedly cleaned up my gear. I then had to tell my better half, who simply shook her head and said, "You better put some aloe on that." Figuring she knows best, I did, as I sat down and writhed in pain for the rest of the afternoon. "But at least my pump was clean, right?" says Tom. Well, Tom still had his thumb, I guess. Tom Thumb. I have in my hand the final story.
We spare no expense for CGI and sound effects.
That's right.
On this station.
Matt Jeanette, another veteran of the show, long time not chat, says Matt, the beer cheese guy. Matt was on the show talking about beer cheese way a long time ago. A little update on myself, Matt says. I've since graduated from Michigan State 6 years ago now and have entered the wine industry, held an internship with the Ernest and Julio Gallo. This is the last story. This is the last one.
Wow.
Ernest and Julio Gallo, upon graduating, worked in wine sales for a little bit, spent some time at B. Nectar Meadery out of Ferndale, Michigan, and now the head winemaker at a winery in southwest Michigan called Fen Valley Vineyards. Wow. Congratulations,
get out.
Matt. Wow.
I wonder if you could get me a few cases of Night Train. Because that's what I've been wanting, you know?
Enjoying the career in fermentation and wouldn't change it for the world. Well, there you go. Thanks, Matt. Anyways, on to the disaster story. Roughly 8 or 9 years ago, my buddies and I, Dan McCarthy and Luke Albertson, both have appeared on your shows, and Dan has appeared earlier in this show, just started into all-grain brewing and developing our own recipes. We had some success brewing our Burnt Foot Brown, Honey Wheat, and Old Man Michigan Ginger Stout, and I thought it would be a good idea to create a wild and wacky IPA. Wild and wacky IPA.
Yeah. So many memories.
That is wacky, wild and wacky stuff.
Wild and wacky stuff.
After traveling to our local homebrew store, I found some cherry smoked malt and thought a cherry smoked cherry IPA would be a great beer. That does sound good. So yeah. After developing an around 7% base recipe that included cherry smoked malts, Maris Otter, and some caramel malt, I came across some packaged pectic enzyme in the winemaking section and thought, I just took a fruit and vegetable processing class. Pectins still exist in fruit. Pectic enzymes break those down and help in fermentation. Maybe I should get some of that. So I did. After purchasing the malt, pectic enzyme, and Burton ale yeast from White Labs, known for its quick fermentation, as we heard in a previous story, I hit up the local grocery store for a 5-pound bag of tart cherries for the fermenter. Dan, Luke, and I started brewing in the early afternoon at my parents' house and spent a nice afternoon around the boil kettle enjoying each other's company and brewing a beer that we hoped would be something out of this world. We had no issues brewing, transferring, or pitching the yeast, so all seemed well. Did I mention it was mid-July and probably 90 degrees? We carried the carboy upstairs to my bedroom where we thought that the fermenter needed a warm place to secure a good fermentation and help those enzymes work to break down the cherries. We then went downstairs, cleaned up our mess, and headed to Dan's house to partake in what all early 20s males do, home from college, play video games and enjoy a nice few cold libations. Around 2 a.m., or possibly later, I make the walk home to my parents' house, just down the street, go up to bed, and wonder, is the beer fermenting yet? I walk into my room and realize that the airlock is nowhere to be found. I then look at the wall, the ceiling, the opposite wall, my bed, the carpet, the curtains, the dresser. Need I go on? What I can surmise in my delirious state was that the pectic enzyme worked too well, broke down the cherries, yeast started fermenting, cherry bits foamed up into the airlock, clogged the airlock, built enough pressure to launch the cherry bits, hop chunks, and whatever beer happened to be in its way all over my room, propelling my hopes, my dreams, my know-it-all food science attitude and education into a humbling masterpiece of down-to-earth realism. Needless to say, I spent the next hour or so scrubbing walls, furniture, and carpet the best I could, escaping the wrath of my parents. The beer ended up finishing quite well. A sweeter IPA with fruity characteristics, light smoke, and wine-like character. I ended up calling it Cherry Bomb IPA for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And drank it the following fall back at MSU. It will forever remain in my memory as one of the most memorable brewing experiences. To this day, there is still a little crusty patch of carpet underneath my dresser as a forever token of the Cherry Bomb IPA. With a, well, I'm sure there are lots of crusty patches of carpet all over.
It's mostly at the Motel 6.
Thanks, Matt. And that is the final homebrew story.
Final one.
Of the disaster show. Oh, my God.
Of the entire decade.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it depends on who you ask, but yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
No, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Of the decade. Yeah. This is the 20. So, yes, it's the end of the decade. So there
the
you
last
go.
Last disaster
of the decade.
Now, what didn't we have? We didn't have, no one got cut.
Yeah. There was no bleeding. Nope. There was some blisters.
Yeah. There was some hot boiling. Yeah. And no one, let's see, we didn't have any spouses coming upon the event at the event. Now we had, you know what I mean?
We didn't have the spouse finding the, well, we might have had one. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. It has been a few days since we started. And three beers.
You've had the opportunity to have more of the beers than I, but I shall catch up in short order.
Oh, I've only had I drank the entire number one, and I drank about 2/3 of number two, and I drank just a few sips of the rosemary beer.
Well, there you go.
So that's not too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're coming up on a solid 2 hours. This is twice as long.
You could cut it in half. You could do two episodes.
Yeah, I could. I'll think about that. Well, Steve, as always, thank you for your patience and your participation and your expertise and your humor and your friendship and all that good stuff. And let's hope that 2021 is better and healthier for all of us, and that many, many wonderful things shall be brewed and partaken of.
That's indeed.
All right. Visit Steve at stevesbrewshop.com.
.com. Still here. Still cooking.
And cranking out orders. And
Yeah. Yeah.
You may get a bonus something in your order.
You never know.
Depending on the blood oxygen level.
Oxygen level and the meds they put me on this week. And if we taped a show or not. Yeah. I'm sorry to say, but that's a reality that you live in when you deal with a small shop like mine.
All right.
Oh, well.
Well, that's all on my agenda, I think.
That's all I got.
So find us on the socials, and on the everything and everybody. I'm gonna I'm going to get the rosemary beer here and say cheers to everybody out there. Thanks for the support. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next year.
Till next year, wear your mask, wash your hands, keep your distance. We'll see you next year.
And write if you get work.
Write if you get work and hang by your thumbs.